Namo Buddhaya, Sugiyo to Francisan Dharma. Welcome to Aloka Buddhist Center. We are very happy to receive you today and also that you here to share the Dharma. So, before the commencement of our Dharma talk today, let us do a short puja in homage to the Buddha. Offering of lights. By offering these lights, may the light of wisdom shine in my heart and dispel the darkness of ignorance. Offering of water. By offering water, may I calm and purify my mind with cool and clean Dharma. Offering of flowers. Just as the flower is beautiful and fresh, soon it will fade. This body of mine, strong and young, soon will grow old and die. Offering of fruits. Just as the fruits come from good seeds, may my thoughts, speech and actions come from good cause and condition. By the offering of incense, by offering perfume smoke, may my speech and actions, like the fragrance of virtues and loving kindness, spread far and wide. Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṁ Bhagavantan Abhivadini Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammam Namami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangham Namami Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Buddham Saranam Gacchami Dhammam Saranam Gacchami Sangham Saranam Gacchami Dutiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami Tatiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami Panatipata Ramani Sikkha Padam Samadhiyami Adinna Dhana Ve Ramani Sikkha Padam Samadhiyami Kame Sumichachara Ve Ramani Sikkha Padam Samadhiyami Musavada Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami Surameraya Majjhapamadattana Veramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami इतिपिसो भगवा अरहं सम्मा सम्बुद्धो विजाचरण सम्पन्नो सुगतो लोकविदो अनुत्तरो पुरिस धम्मसारथि सत्ता देव मनुस्सानं बुद्धो भगवाति स्वाकातो भगवता धम्मो सन्दित्तिको अकालिको एहि पस्सिको ओपनयिको अच्छत्तं वेदितब्बो विन्युहीति सुपटिपन्नो भगवतो सावकसङ्गो उजुपटिपन्नो भगवतो सावकसङ्गो न्यायपटिपन्नो भगवतो सावकसङ्गो सामीचिपटिपन्नो भगवतो सावकसङ्गो यदिदं चत्तारि पुरिसयुगानि अट्टपुरिसभुक्कला एष भगवतो सावकसङ्गो आहुनेयो पाहुनेयो गक्खिनेयो अञ्जलिकरणीयो अनुत्तरं पुण्याकेतं लोकसादि.
Let's conclude the puja with three bows again to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Namo tassa sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa niyānikassa dhammassa. Namo tassa atta ariya bhukkala. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu.
Again, Sambo Buddha, Sugiyotu Verses and Dhamma. Welcome to Aloka Buddhist Center. We are very happy to receive you today. Today is a very beautiful day. We have our brother Theo to share the Dhamma with us. So just a brief bio data of brother Theo. So Bharatio graduated from this university prior in civil engineering in 1979. Oh, that's the year I was born actually, 1979. So I can imagine he has been a very long practitioner of the So he has been a spiritual practitioner and meditator since 1971. Okay. So since his retirement in 2001 from engineering career, he has been sharing his understanding and experiences with those who are keen in search of true happiness, peace and liberation from birth and death and all mental suffering. So with this understanding, we hope everybody can get this happiness that Brother Theo gained from this understanding. So without much ado, I would like to welcome Brother Theo to share his Dhamma and graciously welcome him.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother Danny, for the kind introduction. And a very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. It has been quite a while since I last came here. I was invited here by Dr. J. Eddie 4 or 5 years ago, if I may recall. The last time I came was more or less the same. Except now I heard the chanting is different. Brother Danny's voice is very powerful, very strong. So he gave a lot of faith. Actually, this trip was made rather impromptu. I also didn't know about it until they informed me that they are inviting you to America. So then, this Saturday. So I was still overseas until Thursday before I came back. So as I came back, I rested one day, then today we came back. And Dr. J, he was busy, not able to attend to a lot of things because of COVID and career and many other things. Anyway, he didn't give me any topic to speak on. So then he asked me just now, is there any title? I said no. I said never mind. Let me speak. General title better, so that you can ask me any question or suggest any title if you want. If you don't have, then I have one very simple one, which I feel is very important. Understanding life, its meaning and purpose. Is this okay for you? Okay? Or you want something else, you can let me know. So how many of us truly understand what life is? Anybody from the floor? What is your understanding of life? Anybody want to try? You mean after living so long you don't know what life is? Yeah, most people will come out with this question. What is the meaning of life? Then, is there any purpose to life? So these are the questions that often arise as we go through life. When I was young, I also had the same question because I'm a science student. I came to know how small planet Earth was. We are only one of the third planet from our sun, out of the many planets. Then our sun is like one of the very, very minute billions and billions and billions of stars out there. Some are bigger than us. Then we are one of the, at that time, the population of our planet was 6 billion, I remember. So one out of 6 billion and such a significant planet in the whole universe, which is so immense. Then I was asking myself when I was in Form 5, 1971. I said, who am I? What am I? What am I doing here? What is life? I couldn't understand. Then that question actually started my life journey in search for truth. Then everything just happened. Because when I inquired, I was actually lying down in an open field. You know, my hometown, Alaska, Kedah, hardly any mountain on, very flat on. So I can see the stars. Then I inquire, who am I? What am I? Is there a purpose for me in this planet? Is there meaning to life? I couldn't understand. Then suddenly, deep inside my heart, the answer came out. You must meditate to understand. At that time, I don't know what meditation is. Well, I don't even know what Dhamma is, Buddhism is. So from there, I stopped. Then I went to inquire all the religions that are at that time popular. But none of them satisfied me because either they had this belief in God or whatever. Then I didn't know Buddhism was actually something very different from what my mother did. What my mother did was she had faith in Kuan Yin. She got a statue of Kuan Yin in my house. Then there is a tobacco, the usual deities. Then she used to go to temple. She liked Panama, the Dona Samasi temple. And that one, I go with her, then I feel very comfortable as well. But the other day, I go in, he asked me to put the joystick, make the prayer. I can't. But out of respect for her, I hold the joystick, I can't want to stand there, I put it on the altar. And it has been going on for quite a while. Then later on, one day, I got a classmate, a sister, gave me a book. And this book was very unique. The first edition of What Buddhists Believe by our previous late chief reverend, K.C. Dhammananda. The moment I opened up that book, I realized, according to him, what my mother was doing was Chinese traditional practices. The offering of those things. He even slaughtered chicken to offer. Of course, there are some cake and fruits and all those things, flowers. The moment I saw the chicken being slaughtered and offered, and in return for the offering, my mother asked for wishes, blessing for the children, blessing for the family, all those things. Then I said, if there is Buddhism, never mind. Let it be. So I didn't let it be. Then I searched everywhere, I couldn't find. Then when I read the books, turning away, I had joy when I knew what my mother was doing was not Buddhism. Then I was interested in Buddhism. Then I read further. I saw the Four Noble Truths. Very strange. This Four Noble Truths is the essence of the Buddhist teaching. Very strange. In 1931, when I read this Four Noble Truths, I understood what the truth is. I was so amazed. I said, no one in this universe can understand life to such extent and can summarize it into just Four Noble Truths. Because to me, when I read the Four Noble Truths, I understood it very deeply, very straight. It's like explaining to me the whole of life, the secret of life, both mundane and super mundane. That's why after that, I never turned back. I said, no need to search. That's it. The Buddhist teaching, the Buddha Dharma. That's why to me, I straight away understand that ever since that year, I try to like develop more understanding. But I had to wait till when I complete my Form 6. I completed my Form 6 in 1974. Then I went to University of Malaya. I was offered a civil engineering course at that time, 1975. The first day I was there, Chief Reverend came to Science Faculty, one of the lecture later, and delivered a very scientific talk. For the first time, I saw a monk, Jorge, speak very good English, elegant. Then I was like glued to it. Then I was full of joy. Then after the talk, I went and get the address from him. That's how I went up, and up in Brickfield Temple. Then the rest is history. Yeah. But the most phenomenal thing that happened was that night, after the talk, I went back to my hostel. I was staying in First College. And I don't know what meditation is also. But I heard Chief Reverend keep on talking about the mind. Then he pointed to his brain, the forehead there. He said, look inside. That I had to know where the mind was. What is the mind? He said, look inside. So I went back that night. I waited until almost midnight for my roommate to sleep. Then I sat down and tried to do some meditation without knowing what is meditation. Then I just looked inside. I saw nothing inside there, black. Because I can concentrate quite well, I focus quite well, I can study very well. When I study, I can keep my mind on the study. my mind is very stable. Then suddenly one bright spot appeared. So I got nothing to do. I was thinking, what is that white bright spot? Like a star. So I just focus on it. Then something very strange happened. My mind went beyond that spot. That is like my mind is traveling out into infinite space. It is like you can see like a plane traveling, but it's very small, going out into infinite space. Then after a while, I release it, it came out. So, roughly, I was thinking, maybe maximum I spend half an hour doing all this thing. But when I came out of it and looked at my watch, 4 a.m. I was sitting there for 4 hours without me realizing it. After that, my mind was so calm, so still. That was the first time I experienced what meditation was about. So I told myself, maybe that is meditation. And then after that, I went to breakfast. Then later on, I met many teachers. Then I learned the correct teaching, the correct understanding of what mind is. The mind that Chief Reverend talked about is the mundane mind, the thinking mind. There is another nature, deep within, which is our silent mind, our true mind, before the rising of thought. And all those, I came to know myself, I developed myself later on. So what happened was, all this, as I was studying, my mind was very calm, first. Then I can focus, I can concentrate, I can develop a lot of metta. I saw metta everywhere, you got your metta circle. That time my metta was very strong, very powerful. It is like an energy flowing from that nature come out. And the animal can sense, the non-human can sense, all this. Then that time I was still a student. My mind was very concentrated, very focused, in absorption, mindful all the time. My anapanasati did naturally come. Nobody taught me. Then what they teach me, the rising volume, all I cannot do. Very, very funny. I also don't know why, but naturally I do what I understand. Then later on, after I graduated, I came out to work. Then I realized when I started working, when I touched money, my ambition changed. I became more ambitious. I want to be successful in life. I want to be successful in my career. I want to reach the pinnacle of my career. I want to achieve financial freedom and all those things. Then I realized my heart area to move again, you know. It's no longer like last time, still and calm. Then I realized in the sutta what the Buddha said. He said, when you are in samatha, concentration or absorption or one-pointedness, the mental hindrance are all suppressed. It cannot come up. It appears like you are a really enlightened, really. But the analogy of the glass of water with the sediment down there, if you leave the sediment long enough, you see the clear water. It's like the water is clear to you. But the moment you stir it, the sediment all come out. Then I realize this is not the way. Yes. The defilements, the five mental hindrances, they are still there. I haven't rooted them out. I have suppressed them. That's why after that I met another teacher who explained to me the real four foundation of mindfulness, Satipatthana, the daily mindfulness. Then I release the concentration out and I revert back to daily mindfulness. After I did the daily mindfulness, until my mindfulness became continuous and very stable, then I realized a lot of things. A lot of things start to happen. things that I never see before, I start to see the universal characteristic, anicca, dukkha, anatta, and all of the phenomenal world of consciousness and form, they appear and they arise and they pass away. And every of these movements was so clear to me. Then after that, many things happen. Then the teaching become like very easy to understand, one by one, one by one. That's why finally, I came to understand this. Understanding life, its meaning and purpose. So now, we are ready for this topic. Huh? If you want to ask any question, you can stop me. Just put up your hand, and you can ask. So far, can follow. Huh? Can you all follow? Huh? Yeah. You cannot follow, you let me know. Huh? I slow down a bit. Okay. Why did I say the Four Noble Truths is the secret of life? Both Monday and Super Monday. Let's go through the teaching one by one. What is the First Noble Truth? Huh? I believe you all know that. You all have been in the Dhamma for so long. What is the First Noble Truth? Dukkha. Correct. So, what is the real meaning of this First Noble Truth of Dukkha? The Buddha say there is a First Noble Truth of Dukkha. You all normally translate Dukkha as what? Suffering, yeah? Or unsatisfied freedom. Yeah? But is that the First Noble Truth? The First Noble Truth is actually very different. He said there is a Noble Truth that explain what dukkha is. The prevalence of dukkha in this world. Dukkha is everywhere in the midst of life and nature, is it? So this First Noble Truth, the Buddha said, if you do not have the Dhamma understanding, if you were to confront the first eight realities of life and existence, you will suffer. That is the meaning. That's why he proclaimed the First Noble Truth. He said, birth, old age, sickness and death is suffering. Separation from your loved one, prized possession, and things that you hold on to dearly also can lead to suffering. When you are the people whom you don't like, suffering can also arise. And the seventh reality is when things don't go your way, you develop unhappiness, you develop sadness. When you cannot get what you want, it's the same. You expect to be promoted, you didn't get to be promoted. You expect to do well in the exam, you didn't. You expect to end up having a good job, having a good career, and succeed in life, but it doesn't turn out. So, not able to get what you want, when your expectation in life is not met, when things don't go your way, suffering can also arise. So, these seven realities are common in life. Nature's reality, everybody, not only us, we have to confront them. But the eighth reality is the most important. The Buddha said, in short, it is due to our severity, self-delusion, that conditions us to attach and cling onto this five aggregate of form and mind that I call dukkha. So what is this five aggregate of form and mind? Why when you attach and cling and grabs onto it deludedly, the Buddha called it upadana khandas, suffering arise. That is key. Where that final suffering is the meditative understanding. When you meditate only, you can understand that. Because that is the final summary. It summarizes all of life. So, this first overthrow of dukkha, explain to us the realities of life and existence. This reality means it is going to happen to anyone who live life long enough. Understand? Not? No matter who are you, what are you? You can be a king, an emperor, or an ordinary human being. If you go through life, you will experience the eight realities. So these eight realities summarize to us all of life, mundane life. There is nothing you do in this world that is apart from these eight realities. So this First Noble Truth already is so powerful. Everything about life is explained here. And he said, if you don't have the Dhamma understanding, if you have not penetrated the All Noble Truth, you will develop suffering. Then the second Noble Truth is, there is a cause. Cause of arising of dukkha. So in life, if you know how suffering comes to be according to this eight reality and the cause behind, then you will know how to manage your life, true or not? True or not? Because you know there is a cause. And what is the cause? You all should know, isn't it? What is the cause? Cause of arising of suffering. Craving, isn't it? So craving is the cause. And what is craving? The textbook explains three types of craving. And you all recall? What are the three types of craving? Another one is one of them, yeah. Craving for existence, craving for non-existence. Okay? The first one is sensual craving. So, kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. Do you know the meaning? Of course, the first one is easy. Sensual craving. Craving of the senses. We have our five physical senses. We have our eye, our ear, our nose, our tongue, etc. Then we have a brain, which is the six senses. These six senses, when they receive sense data and the mind make contact, it triggers off consciousness. That's how we can become conscious of what we see. Conscious of what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. When we become conscious, at the moment of consciousness, what happened? The Buddha said, you crave for what you see. There is craving at the moment of sense experience. When you see something you like, there is this sensual desire. If you don't like, there is this aversion. That's why like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. These are craving. Sensual craving, positive and negative, the first time. All the six senses have. So if you don't understand this, you attach and cling, then this develop into habitual tendency that cause your heedless thinking to continuously arise. That's why human beings who are not trained in meditation, who are not mindful and aware, they think a lot. They have a lot of heedless thinking. The Buddha called it avijja paccaya sankhara. Because of ignorance, avijja, you create mental activity, sankhara. So this heedless thinking can come in the form of mental, what they call chattering. You realize you chatter a lot or not. You verbalize a lot or not. You complain, comment, you talk a lot inside. That's enough. You can hardly become quiet or silent. A meditative mind is tranquil, still, without movement. That's why you are not able to be in the meditative state. That's why this type of movement arises. So sensual craving is the culprit. So the Buddha said, the reason why your mind cannot be peaceful is because you have the five mental hindrances. You heard of this? five kind of mental hindrances. They are all connected. First one is what? First one is what? Sensual desire, isn't it? Sensual desire and ill will. Desire and number two is ill will. These two is what sensual craving is all about. Understand? Like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. If throughout the day you are not mindful, not aware, you heedlessly arise this type of mental sensual desire and ill will, is positive and negative sensual craving, what will happen to you? You will develop as habit, isn't it? It becomes habitual, isn't it? That's why habitual tendency of this create mental hindrance. And what are mental hindrance? Whenever you have sensual desire and ill will, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant reaction during daily life, you already have the mental hindrance. And what are mental hindrances? They hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you cannot meditate. That's why throughout the day you think a lot. You react a lot. You store your mind. You become heedless. The third mental hindrance is what? Very easy, Sleepiness, Sloth and torpor, So what is sloth and torpor? Sloth and torpor means your mind becomes sleepy. Laziness, sleepiness, dull. Because you don't see the importance of this teaching, like you attend a class lecture. If that lecture doesn't attract you or doesn't interest you, what happens? You sleep in the class then. It's the same. If you are not interested in Dhamma, you are not interested in meditation, you will sleep. Understand? So if it's a hindrance, then how can you meditate with this mindset? The fourth one is what? The fourth mental hindrance is what? They tell you only restlessness of mind. What is actually this restlessness of mind? What is actually this fourth mental hindrance? Why are you restless? Because you have fear, worry, anxiety. That's why your mind becomes restless. You lack faith, the spiritual faculty, the faith, the sadhana of that. And because of that, the mind becomes restless, like worry, have a lot of anxiety. And this one is the result of what? The first number two reality. Birth, old age, sickness and death. When you grow old, most of you are old, you know, a lot of problems. Physically, your health, your physical condition, they already not like before. So, all your senses, your physical organs, they start to deteriorate. Your eyesight, your hearing, then disease will follow, understand? Even slight fall or accident can lead to severe consequences. So, especially people who have disease nowadays, very common, cancer, stroke, even what they call Alzheimer and all those things. Then there are some, even very young, they have this what they call insomnia, cannot sleep. Then they went into mental depression. Why? Because of first number two reality. They have problem. Problem of what? Health problem. Relationship problem. Understand? Financial problem. So all these are the first number two reality. When they hit you, you start to worry, you start to panic. You start to have anxiety, that's why your mind is not restless. That's why it haunts you. You cannot meditate. The last one is what? The last one is doubt. When you have doubt, can you meditate? You cannot do that. You full of doubt then. Wow. This book say like that. That book say like that. This monk teach like that. This brother Tico teach like that. You don't know which one is correct. So you become very confused. So you have doubt. Doubt is what? Lack of faith in the Buddha and his teaching. And who is the Buddha? And what is his teaching? His teaching is very unique. That's why we are very blessed as a Buddhist to have his teaching given to us free. Why did I say that? Because the Buddha is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened, perfect in wisdom and virtue. You can say at the time when he was born, 2000 over years ago, he was the wisest and the most virtuous human being ever to be born. To have him as your teacher, you should have a lot of faith in him. You should have a lot of confidence in him in that. So your faith and confidence in the Buddha will give rise to the respect and gratitude towards him. That's why it becomes unshakable. There's no more doubt. Then why do you still have doubt? Because you don't know who the Buddha is. When you know who the Buddha is and know what his teaching is, then his teaching is so special and so unique. He can explain to you the secret of life, the meaning of life, and you will know how to live life. If you don't understand life, I ask you one simple question. How do you live life? You can't live life if you don't understand what life is. So you complain a lot. Most of the time you have problems, you become miserable. So these five mental hindrances, remember, they are called hindrance because they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness, and inner calmness. If you don't have the meditative mind. Yet to have the meditative mind is to have the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the awareness within without thought, the clarity, the silence. Okay? So the Buddha said, the reason why these five mental hindrances is that when you lack the opposite five, what are the opposite five? The five spiritual faculties. This one I think you all know, right? The five spiritual faculties. What are they? Huh? What are they? Sada, Virya, third one? Sati. Then? Samadhi. The last one is what? Huh? Panya. Huh? Panya is wisdom. So he said, if you have these five, it will counter the above. That's why the spiritual faculty must be very stable. When you have faith, sada, what happened? The doubt is no more. True or not? Then when you have virya, you will not be sleeping. True or not? We have a vigya in a spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity. It's not an effort. People interpret as effort. Under Noble Eightfold Path, the right effort is sama vayama. This one is virya. It's not vayama. That's why it's not effort. So when you have that spiritual tenacity after you have the faith to go this way, to cultivate the Buddha Dharma, to train the mind, to develop the spiritual faculty, then you cannot be sleepy. Where you see the importance of this teaching. Understand? Then the third one, when you have sati, when you are aware, mindful, you don't think. So if you don't think, sensual desire and ill will cannot be there. Your mind cannot be restless. So this one gone, this one gone, this one also gone. You understand? Then samadhi means when your sati is very stable, your mind develops samadhi. Samadhi is collectedness of mind, not the samatha one. Samatha one is one-pointedness concentration. Samadhi under the five spiritual faculty is called collectedness of Ma, the unwavering mind. Means the mind is collected and unwavering. And this mind can see things as they are because they are collected and unwavering. When the sense data imprint upon your sense basis, when sense or consciousness arise, your mind does not stir. Because it's connected and unwavering. That's why it can see things as they are. It can insight into phenomena, awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. So this is how we should understand the teaching. Then these are spiritual faculties that can enable you to understand spiritual teaching. Do you understand? So without the spiritual faculty, mental hindrance take over. You cannot meditate. So now we finish these two. So the cause of arising of suffering is craving. Sensual craving is one of them. Okay? The other one, craving to be, or what you call existence, means to exist and become that thing, or craving not to be for non-existent, not to become that thing. Become means you become the thing you want to be. Like you want to be a politician. Understand? You want to be a CEO. You want to be promoted to the head of department or what? Because you think it's very interesting. It gives you higher salary. It gives you prestige and all this thing. But what happened is, these are all craving. Even into suffering. Why? When you cannot get what you want, when you don't perform, when you don't deliver, you get demoted. Or when you make a mistake, people threaten to sack you. Or take disciplinary action against you. Then what happens? You become miserable. Then when you are able to be promoted, when you are promoted, they don't pay you for nothing. They expect you to deliver. That's why they will harass you. They will put pressure on you to deliver. And the more higher you go, the more what they call extent of responsibility will be given to you. Where you're supposed to deliver. So what happens is, when you cannot take the hot seat anymore, because when you are up there, a lot of people are aiming to take over from you, you understand? They may backstab you and do a lot of nonsense behind you. So that position is not easy to maintain unless you are very good. Whatever it is, the Buddha said, this craving for existence will lead to suffering if you are not able to understand that the world keep on evolving and changing. Because nobody can be in that like very alert and efficient type of mindset all the time. As you age, you lag behind in many things, especially nowadays when there is digital technology, when there is IT and all those things. You are from the old school, you cannot follow up. And many things you are not able to do as is expected of you because the society has evolved. So all this give rise to suffering. So after that, you don't want to become that. That's why craving not to be or for non-existent. So whatever it is, the three types of craving will bring forth suffering. So when you understand the realities of life and existence, and if you attach and cling, suffering will arise, means you understand the mundane aspect of life. If I want to be successful in life, what must I do? I must not crave. But not to crave is easier said than done, isn't it? What is the meaning of not to crave? Because the Buddha has a very unique teaching. He said, within the mundane existential world, there is this very powerful law. He said there are three types of right view. He called it the law of karma. He said if you want to understand life, you must understand this law. After the law of karma is law of mind. This one you need to meditate. Then the third one is law of Dhamma Niyama. This law of karma is what you need to understand, the Buddha said. You all understand law of karma. You heard of it before, right? What is it basically? You reap what you sow, isn't it? Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. You plant the seed of evil, you reap the fruit of evil. You plant the seed of wholesomeness, you reap the fruit of wholesomeness. Then Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, what is it? Mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, what happens? Huh? Your mind decides what karma is there. Karma is mental intention, isn't it? So Dhammapada verse 1, the Buddha said, if you choose to be heedless, then you will act, speak and think. If a heedless mind that has an evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, then suffering will follow you. Like the wheel that follow the hoof of the ox. Very obvious. If you want to suffer, don't have to train your mind to be heedful or awake. Don't have to do anything. Continue to be heedless. Continue to daydream. Continue to have the five mental hindrances, light and dislike. Continue. Be heedless. Don't train your mind. No necessity, nothing. And then, Dhammapada was one. Suffering will follow you. If that is what you choose, your life is destined. Your karma will fall, you will get into trouble. Whereas the complementary verse 2, the Buddha again say, mind is a forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arise, again, all things arise. So if you determine to understanding this teaching, to train the mind to be mindful, to be aware, and to avoid all the heedless thinking, means you determine to train your mind to act, speak and think with a wholesome mind that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. Then what happens? Happiness will follow you. Like your shadow that never leaves you. So life is very simple, very easy to choose. So which do you choose? Dhammapada was 1 or 2? Tell me. Definitely Dhammapada was 2. So just train your mind to be mindful, aware, and understand what constitutes evil. The three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion are evil. When you have the mind state of greed, anger, aversion, envy, jealousy, and delusion, or doubt, or fear, all these are the mind states with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. When you have that, it makes you evil. That's why it's called the evil roots. Root of all evil. Make you evil, remember. Whenever you have greed, selfishness, craving, desire, attachment, clinging, that is greed. Suffering will fall. So, mindful of that, be aware of that. When you do things, when you act in whatever action you do, or create whatever thought, make sure you are mindful enough to ensure that the evil roots are not there. Then happiness will follow you. You will have a good life. If you take care of karma, karma take care of your life. Why? That's why the Buddha, actually, his teaching started with this law of karma. He said, there are 5 things you must reflect every day. The 5 daily contemplations. You heard of it, isn't it? The 5 daily contemplations. The first 4 refers to the first noble truth, reality. He said, to understand the first noble truth and not to be caught, you have to reflect on all this. The first 3, he said, this physical body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. Because it goes the way of nature. It has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So when the body is sick, do not allow your mind also to be sick. This is not you. This is non-self, anatta, the physical body is part of the five aggregate of form and mind. That one is a very big topic, the five aggregate. I got not enough time to cover it today. If you want another session. These five aggregate, the Buddha say, one of them is the physical body. And according to the Buddha, these five aggregate, they are non-self. They are anicca, impermanent. It's not a permanent and changing entity. You attach and cling, suffering will be the result. It exhibits the three universal characteristics. So this first three contemplation is to allow you to be free from this physical body suffering as it grows old, as it ages, as it develops sickness and disease, then when it dies, please do not be deluded. Because this one is just the physical body, not you. Your nature never dies. You have an eternal nature within that never dies. So the physical body goes the way of nature. That's why it's of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. So when you understand, like the Buddha said, when your body is sick, do not allow your mind also to be sick. That is the meaning. So that first three will enable you to handle disease, injury, getting old and die. Then the fourth one is separation, is it? There is this daily contemplation, is it? All that you think you own, your loved one, your prized possession, whatever that you hold to dearly, they will one day separate from you. Either when conditions cease to be, they separate from you, or when your breath stops, they also separate from you. Breath stop means you die, and then you don't own anything. But all these that you come to own or possess, they come with condition. There are causes and conditions behind. So when you understand all this, then you realize all these are temporal. Like our loved one. They have to leave us. They have to separate from us. If they live longer than you, then you separate from them. You understand? So separation is a reality. Yes. Everything that arises that you believe you own doesn't really belong to you. Where they come from nature. They are conditioned arising, cause of phenomena. Dependent originating, not a permanent and changing entity. So separation is a reality. Separation can happen in many ways. Due to death, due to nature's disaster, like tsunami, earthquake, building collapse, war, and a lot of other. Then separation from prized possession is like your business during financial crisis, during pandemic, like recently. It can separate from you. When you make a wrong call, when you make a wrong decision, you can lose your investment, your wealth, your whatever you think you own. So these are the first four reality to deal with the first number two. Then the last one is what? The Buddha said, this is the most important contemplation. We are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. If this is the nature's law, what must you do? You must take care of karma, isn't it? Come on. Then we are born of it. We inherited everything. The law of karma. And every moment, every instant, we are conditioned and supported by it. And we are what we are because of karma. So this karmic nature, you must take care, otherwise you suffer. So how to take care of karma? Just like the Buddha came up with the precepts. The five precepts. Precepts are major evil. If you break the precept, it turns to major evil. It will cause your karmic nature to fall. So when you understand this, you will actually have a lot of gratitude towards the Buddha. Compassion. There is out of love and compassion for living with that he advises us to renew our precept. Every time you do your puja, you renew your precept. Means you reaffirm that you undertake the training rule to abstain from all those five things. Healing, causing harm. But these are major evil. Cause you to fall. Give rise to negative tendency and karmic consequence. So if you want to have the good life, you must take care of karma. How to take care of karma? Avoid all evil. Do good. Purify your mind. Follow the advice of the Buddha. So the advice of the Buddha is what the meditation is. The Noble Eightfold Path is. Avoid all evil means keep the precept. Be mindful of the precept. Do not violate it. It's not difficult. If you are serious about life, you will do it. Understand? Then, avoid all evil is one aspect. The famous Dhammapada verse 183, Sabba Papasa Akarana. Okay? Then, Kusalesa Upasamana. What is Kusala? Wholesomeness. He said, wherever there is condition to do wholesomeness, you must try your best to do. So this is cultivation. Noble Eightfold Path factor. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four right effort. You have to cultivate them. And the four right effort is the most important. Right effort to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has already arisen. Then right effort to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. Then right action, the third right action is to cultivate the virtue, the wholesome, right thought, right speech, and right action that are still not in you. The last right effort is to refine upon all these right thought, right speech, right action that you have cultivated and perfected. It's not different. Just do all this. Then you could have fulfilled the second advice of the Buddha. Then the last one, of course, you need to meditate. Purify your mind. That one take longer time. That one maybe another session, you got chance, I will teach you, I will share with you. Okay? So, the first two, number two, is very important. This is mundane aspect of life. Then what is the third, number two? Third, number two is what? Huh? Cessation of dukkha. Okay? Good. So the third number two, the Buddha said, cessation of dukkha is possible. So he said, suffering may not be. That is the most important. You don't have to suffer. The cessation of dukkha leading to nibbana is possible. Leading to nibbana is possible. Leading to the realization of nibbana is possible. If I know this is possible, then what am I waiting for? You should go out and cultivate this then. But the Buddha never stopped here. He continued with the fourth number two. What is the fourth number two? Yeah. What is the fourth number two? The path that leads to the cessation of all suffering. So the Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path. The path that can lead to the end of all suffering. And what is this Noble Eightfold Path? Is if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now. And this is the meditation. That's why without Noble Eightfold Path, there is no meditation. If your meditation does not bring you back to perfect the Noble Eightfold Path factor, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. You can have psychic ability or whatever, but you don't have the Noble Eightfold Path factor. That is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. The reason the Buddha mentioned this is very simple. Because to him, he said, this is the realization of the supramundane, to go beyond existence, to transcend life. Once you understand life, then you can transcend life. And these two noble truths, when you realize them, you can go beyond birth and death. You don't have to come again. Enlightenment in the here and now is possible. So Noble Eightfold Path means what? The Buddha said, these Four Noble Truths are called Noble Truths because when you realize this truth, you become Noble Ones. What are Noble Ones? Noble Ones are called Aryas in the time of the Buddha. They are noble people. That's why Aryas are enlightened beings who have the noble quality. What are the noble qualities? They are very noble in the way they live their life. That's why they have Noble Eightfold Path factor. They got right view, which is the Dhamma understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence. That's why they have right view, very noble in the understanding of life. Then they have right thought. They are very noble in the way they arise their thought. They have right speech, right communication skill, very tactful in the way they communicate with each other, with the humanity. Then your right action. All these noble qualities reflect an enlightened being. If you don't have them, means you are not an enlightened being. Then noble, you have right view, right thought, right speech, right action, then right life view. The way they live their life also following Noble Eightfold Path factor. That's why they have noble livelihood, noble living. Then they have this noble right effort to constantly purify, to train. Then they have noble mindfulness, awareness, to be ever mindful, constantly meditating. That's why finally stabilizing it into right samadhi. So this Noble Eightfold Path factor will make you enlightened being or noble ones. That's why it's called Noble Eightfold Path. Then after I finish this, then you will understand how blessed are you as a Buddhist. Without this teaching, I know it's not easy to get out of suffering. It's not easy to understand life. So when I understand this teaching, I understand all of life, mundane and super mundane. That's why I have given you some books. Danny, where are the books? Great. After CEO, can you collect it? The first one. This one is very important. This is a Bangkok seminar, international seminar. They invited me to deliver. I represented Malaysia as a lay person in the year 2013. I actually share this understanding. Success in life via meditation, following the Dhamma way. You must go back and read. All that I share with you, they are all covered there. So you read this, you understand. Then the rest is for you to develop further understanding. Then there is one more thing I didn't cover. I have taught you life, understand life. Then what is its meaning and purpose? And now we can go into it. Once you understand life, then you can talk about its meaning and purpose, isn't it? First of all, we will talk about from a non-Buddhist point of view. To a non-Buddhist, what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of life? You've heard of Maslow need theory, the need hierarchy. If your main issue about life is to survive, then what is your priority in life? Food and shelter, isn't it? You talk about religion, he got no time. So different people have different need, different meaning. Then after he has food and shelter, he starts to go up the Maslow need hierarchy. Then what he look for? He look for better pay, better job. Then after that, job satisfaction. All this. Then all these needs, after you have achieved them, let's say, the Maslow need hierarchy, then only you can talk about people who are successful in life. Understand? That's why in my book, I also talk about two types of success. mundane success and super mundane success. Most people can achieve mundane success. Means what? When you are born, maybe you have quite a good childhood life. You have good parents who can afford to give you the good life. Then you study very well. You achieve academic success. You reach the pinnacle of your academic career. Maybe you did very well. That one quite easy. Then you come out to work. You achieve what? Career, yeah. Career success, yeah. Let's say you reach the pinnacle of your career, promoted until you cannot promote anymore. Then, are you happy? You are still not happy, yeah. Why? Because you think more of other things. Career is one thing, but money is another thing, isn't it? So financial success. And financial success, different people different. To a lot of people, when they haven't made it, they say, 1 million, good enough. Huh? Good enough. But when they have made it, 1 million, not enough. Maybe 5. Maybe 10. Then some think of 100, think of billions. Where does it end? Material success has this set of problems. You keep on craving, desire. You keep on wanting. That's why there is a saying that goes, when you continue to crave, means what? You work for money. You never work to have the good life. Understand? That's why I retire very early. Because to me, life is very simple. Our average lifespan is what? 75, let's say, huh? Divide by 3, 25 years per segment, okay? 3 phases of our life. First 25 years, what you do? You grow up as a child, you study, isn't it? Second 25 years, what you do? You work, isn't it? You work and work and work, isn't it? You want to continue to work until you die. The third 25, not guarantee one more. So you work until so stressed out, so full of stress and pressure, then you realize your health has become very, very bad. Then you regret. That's why there is a saying, they say, you work so hard for money, then later on you use all the money you have made to cure your sickness, your disease. That is not life, isn't it? That's why that one has no meaning. If you do that, I don't understand why people do that. Maybe that is what they are. But for us who have the Dhamma, we look at life differently. When we are successful, that's why in the book I wrote that, I reached the pinnacle of all the mundane things that I want. Then I had one very special one. In 1989, I realized my spiritual success, my spiritual understanding. So I also reached the pinnacle of my spiritual life. That's why with these two, I understand life. Then I decide to retire, simple life. I call it a day when my daughter graduated. When my eldest daughter, Sri Tracy, is here. He, by the way, she is only 1 year older than you. Oh, younger, oh, 1980, or younger than you. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, she is from 1980. Yeah. So, when she graduated, I call it a day. I said, I don't need much money to survive. And I did very well in my career. Yeah? And I achieved what I want in life. That's why I understand life. I understand its meaning and its purpose. I do not deludedly like go after materialistic success. For what? There are reasons why people want all this. Because it's prestige. It assures them financial stability. But if you don't know how to live your life to have the joy, the happiness, and the understanding, and take care of your health, then to me, that is their way. I don't want to end up like them. Because what I want is a more complete life that is more balanced. that has the understanding. My mind state are always peaceful, tranquil. The awareness is always there. My nature is always with that awareness belief. And I understand life. That's why I can live life and I can develop all the joy and happiness in life. Then I do what I like to do, share Dhamma, help people with affinity, and do the things that I like to do in life. And this is what I believe life should be. Yeah? But of course, I respect everybody. You are the way you are. How you want to live your life is up to you. But if you have this Buddhist teaching, I hope you can develop the understanding of what life is and develop your priority. Okay? With this, I will end my sharing. Okay, if you got any question or what, I can answer them. Okay?
So very insightful talk by Manichu. I feel the pop on time. Relate to his life. So in that mix, very meaningful. It's not just from the book, he really shared from his own experience. So now we open for any question from the floor. Anybody would like to ask question?
You should focus here, the five mental spiritual faculties. Here, you must stabilize this. These five spiritual faculties are very important. You must every day contemplate and reflect who the Buddha is, how wise and unique a being he is. Then your faith becomes very, very strong. Very strong. How can you have a teacher who is the wisest and the most virtuous in this universe, no? Not only in our planet? No? To have him as my teacher, I felt blessed. I had a lot of gratitude and I really respect him. That's why I have faith in him completely. That's why I never searched after 1971. Who can teach me like that? Cannot. Unless he is the real one, he cannot understand life until so thorough. And all this, the moment I read the Four Noble Truths, nobody taught me, you know, I already understood. What I share with you, some of the heading will be in the sutta or in the teaching. But the explanation of it is totally not that, is it? The explanation of it comes from true understanding. From within. You cannot read from book. The book, like Brother Danny said, is not real life experience. It cannot be a living reality. When I went to Singapore recently to deliver a talk, that Brother DJ, he explained to me. He said, Brother Theo, do you know why I become so interested in your teaching? I said, why? He said he saw the YouTube. He doesn't know me. Then one day he clicked on the YouTube. He has been a practicing Buddhist for many years, I believe 20, 30 years, or maybe more. He said he knew a lot of theory. He understood a lot of Buddhist teaching, but he realized it cannot be put into practice. He cannot make it a living reality. But he heard my video in a lot of places I mentioned, this teaching can be a living reality. That's why he was caught. Then he keep on searching for my YouTube channel. Then he decided to contact me, then invite me over. That's how it happened. So to make it a living reality, you must put it into practice. Like the Buddha said, there are three stages to Dhamma cultivation. Stage one is pariyatti. You heard of pariyatti, isn't it? The learning of the teaching. Once you learn it, is you develop the understanding of it, not the theory. The theory is not much use. Once you understand it, then you put it into practice. Put it into practice means what? Make it a living reality. Means like Dhammapada was 1 and 2. You put it into practice. You check your daily life. Last time you are heedless, that's why you have a lot of issues in life. Then the moment you change over, like a lot of Kayamita was following for many years, they realize their life changed. Dr. J also will know, you know, the last 2-3 years he also changed a lot. When you understand, you change. When you don't understand, you are caught. That's why you attach, you cling, you grasp, you become afflicted. But when you understand, you wake up. All this while, what am I doing? This is not life. Life is not like what they used to say, Reverend Suwano last time used to share, gong gong toa, gong gong xia, gong gong. See, everything also gong. I mean, deluded one. Understand? Is that what you want? If you have the Dhamma, then why must life be that way? Why must life be full of suffering, misery, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, problem? To me, there is no such thing as a problem. It may shock you when you hear this. But what is problem? When you perceive that condition or that situation with negativity, then you call it my problem. Understand? Let's say, cancer. Maybe third stage, fourth stage. Or even fifth stage. This is the reality, the Buddha said. Understand how? Not only you have to go through, you neglect your body, you don't take care, if your karmic DNA is such that you come, and now you ask the Anta, he will know. A lot to do with karma. Then, it's good. Then you come with this. You have to accept this reality. When you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, condition and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So whatever happened to you in this life is all karmically related. If I know it's karma, I have to do something to overcome it. So the Buddha teaches three ways. First, ask for forgiveness. Repentance. Chanting. Then after that, vow not to repeat all this by following the advice of the Buddha. To avoid all evil, do good, and purify that. And that is the beginning of cultivation. Like what you are doing. Keep the precepts. Understand now? Now you move on to training your spiritual faculty, especially mindfulness, until you become very stable. Well, unless it's stabilized, you cannot progress. You will get stuck. So when I say life itself is, in the midst of life, you must be mindful, aware. Heedful. Otherwise you don't stand a chance. Yeah, the Buddha said under Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23, very clearly. The first three verses of Appamadavaka means the heedfulness section of the Dhammapada. Verse 21 says, the Buddha, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So if you are not heedful, means you are not ever mindful and constantly meditating, which is Dhammapada verse 23, then you don't stand a chance in becoming enlightened. The spiritual life is not there. Because the heedless are as if dead, means spiritually they are as if dead. They may be conscious of life, but spiritually, they are assisted. Well, they don't stand a chance to become enlightened. So, if heedfulness is so important, it is needed in the midst of life for you to stand a chance. So, you have to train your mind to be mindful and aware throughout the day. That's why the Buddha said, under the first foundation of mindfulness, kaya upasana. After you train anapanasati, or any mindfulness training, the bowing, the walking, or whatever, until it stabilizes, then go into daily life, mindful of the four postures, standing away, walking away, sitting away, lying down away. Then the third category of cultivation of kaya upasana is mindfulness of all action, all movement, connecting the four postures, means standing, looking forward the way, bending, stretching, turning the way, answering nature's call the way, putting on the shoulder cloth or whatever, the monk's robe or a slave person. When you do your daily activity, maintain awareness. Just maintain, don't try to know, maintain. Do until it becomes a part of you. Then you will realize one day, suddenly, hey, how come my awareness and my hand movement become one? My awareness and my nature become one. Everything has become like one. And then only your mindfulness has stabilized. Otherwise, your mindfulness has not stabilized. So just continue to determine to be mindful, to be aware. Then contemplate on who the Buddha is, what his teaching is, so that sadha virya become very strong. Then it will drive you to constantly cultivate sati. Then, are you working? No. Then at home, you're doing your household thing, mindful, aware. Sweeping floor, washing floor, cooking or whatever, aware. You realize this will change you. You tend to think a lot. Your thought is way ahead of your action. You don't believe me, you go and find out.
Sometimes I realize
that. So
I just stay with it. I just
relax
myself and
stay
with it. And I realize that
it's mine and it's me. Correct. But then you have to work. You have to live. That's why all this movement has to be there. So don't go and listen to other you that you slow down your movement. Standing, 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 walking. Forget about it. That is not natural. Natural means what? Every day I walk, I walk. The Buddha said, walking away. He didn't say slow down and walk slowly and develop awareness of mind. No! To be aware is very simple. Without thought, you are already aware. Why can't you be without thought? You are not able to do that because your spiritual faculties are not stable. You think a lot, maybe your sati is not stable. The sati has to be stable. That's why I teach you that awareness-based meditation. You must try that. Relax, maintain awareness, don't try to know, don't try to do. Because the knowing is by the thought, the doing is by the thought. When thought is active, you cannot be mindful. Remember that. Just silent, relax. That's why when this one stabilizes, when you come out of it, everything is in sati. You realize your action, kaya, is in sati. That everything you do in life is sati. Every seeing moment is in sati. Hearing is in sati. Smell, taste, tactile. You have to do until that stability. You cannot be mindful in the midst of life, you don't stand a chance. That's why stability of mindfulness is very important. So have faith, do. It will come. You only need to persevere. It will come. Okay?
Hello, brother Phil. Thank you for the enlightening talk. Very magnificent talk. And I think it's also good to have the fundamentals laid up.
Yeah.
Because people always know that they know, but they don't know. So yeah, the ignorance of their own knowledge. Yeah. So that's the danger. So my question, I think, mainly because we have to live in the present. That's why awareness is and being in the sati and so on. But given the current climate, we can see a lot of wars and so on. For example, Sri Lanka is a Buddhist country. So I'm just curious if the law of Dharma is universal. Maybe you can give some background of it. Thank you.
Father, thank you so much for the good question. You see, life is not what most people believe or think. Like just my brother mentioned, a lot of people they study the teaching as an academic thing or scholarly kind of teaching. They think they know, but they actually don't know. Why? Because thinking you know is very easy. Because you know about the theory and stuff. Theory means what? Yeah, five noble truth, four noble truth. First noble truth, they always tell me what? Life is suffering. That is not the first noble truth. You don't go into the detail and stuff. You touch the superficial, then you think you know, you go and read. Share or repeat what you heard or what you read from the book. But you didn't put it into practice. You didn't contemplate, reflect and realize it. Then leave it. That's where the difference is. You think you know, but you never know. Because what you know is so superficial. So, like surface deep, you haven't gone into the teaching. The teaching is so rich. So full of essence. But people cannot understand because the authentic teaching that is very, very potent that can awaken living being is missing. Because to develop this understanding, you need mindfulness, awareness, stability of it. Without mindfulness, awareness, and stability of it, you can't. Like just now, Brother said, we need to be in the present moment, which is correct. But how many people can do it? Can be in the moment? Because you think a lot. Like take for example, I move my hand to have a drink. I show it to you. Can you do it without any thought? That whole awareness. And when I drink, I taste it. My consciousness and awareness is there. Then I put it back. But you all who are not trained, most of you know what you are doing now. You have been thinking already. Thinking. Even when you want to move your hand, you are not aware. You are still thinking. I don't know. Then sometimes when you bring this to your mouth, I mean, sad to say that, sometimes it didn't go to your mouth, go somewhere else, also you know. Then sometimes you spill it out. You are thinking, you are being heedless, you are not mindful, you are not aware. Then coming back to mindfulness, to understand the teaching, leading to the wisdom to enable you to understand life. He brought up an example of Sri Lanka. It's a Buddhist country. It's supposed to inherit a lot of the teachings from India, from Gautama Buddha's time. I think you all know what? There's a Arahant Mahinda, I think, that took the teaching over from India to Sri Lanka and other things. And Sri Lanka has a lot of chanting monks, a lot of very good, what they call, chanting scholarly. Of course, there are some practicing monks in the early years too. But then, all the years, how did the teaching become so different? How did the teaching deteriorate until what it is now, until you look at the consciousness? The whole country almost went bankrupt, got to go to IMF. The president cannot chase away and all these things. And then they are Buddhist country. Buddhist is not the label. If you claim yourself to be a Buddhist or a devotee of the Buddha or a disciple of the Buddha, you must at least, minimum, follow his advice, yeah. to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. This Dhamma Pada verse 183. Sabba papasa akaram. Usalesa upasampada. Sachitta yodapana. Etang buddhana sasa. At least, do that. To be worthy of the Buddha's name. To be his disciple. But if you only in words say that you are a Buddhist, then you try to defend Buddhism and do all those funny things to argue with people instead of cultivating, developing the right practice, then it has no meaning. To me, the label is no meaning. The Buddhist label or the various type of label doesn't serve much purpose. To me, it's your heart. If your heart don't have the truth, don't have the number, then whatever you call yourself, no meaning. But if your heart has the Dhamma, has the truth, has the understanding, then you are naturally spiritual. Yes, sir. No need to have the label to make you spiritual. So what happened is, over the years, just like what we saw in our planet, our society, and even Asia alone, you can see, how come China, the last 30-40 years, become so advanced, so developed? Previously, Communist China was actually full of corruption and a lot of this type of what they call bad governance type of government. Then they determined to change, to transform. They followed the, maybe the Buddhist principles. Then they came up. But of course, the power of it is science and technology. So, science and technology is like the spiritual field. If you have got it correct, if you have the breakthrough by the scientists, then science and technology will progress. That's why our scientific era, our internet technology, our understanding of science and technology has developed and evolved and become very sophisticated and different from what it is maybe the last 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, the last 4 decades is way surpassing the 5,000 years of history. Why? Because we got it right. The scientists came up with a correct theory like Einstein or something, then they break through. Not a breakthrough. So Dhamma is the same. If during the Buddha's time, when Sakyamuni Buddha arrived, you hear in the sutta hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands enlightened. Arahant. How come it's possible during that time? But now, we are in an era where you can read about certain type of book where this supposed to be spiritual Buddhist authority mentioned. If you can find one true Arya, Sotapan, you're very lucky. What is happening? If the teaching is still what it is, authentic, more and more will be enlightened, isn't it? We will have more and more Arya, isn't it? But why are we not having it? It's because I realize the teaching has become so different. That's why after I came to understand what this teaching is, I dare not come out to share. For the first 15 years, I lie low. I didn't do anything. Until 2004, when Sister Yun Chan met me and requested from me 3 times for me to come out. Only I decided to come out. Because what has been taught is the complete opposite of what my nature understands or realizes. I realized that what has been taught is very theoretical and repetitive and superficial. But please don't quote me. This is my personal observation. Not everyone is like that. There are some good monks and good teachers. You cannot deny that. But they are very quiet. They are not the ones that come out and do all these things. If you can find them, I rejoice. I salute you. But this type of real teacher who can teach and transform and make a difference to people's understanding are very rare nowadays, very, very rare. Yeah. So, hopefully that will satisfy you why Sri Lanka becomes like that. Well, over the years, the Dharma has become like that, and that practicing of the Buddhist teaching is no longer what it used to be. So the materialistic world has taken over. You want to add something or ask something?
Since the law of karma is universal, all the world knows that the life principles applies to everyone.
Yeah, applies to everyone. It will not change.
I think
we
are just fighting
over
labels.
Correct. Religious label. Because to me, it's no meaning. We have been claiming to be Buddhist, but how much do we understand the true teachings of the Buddha? I think it's more important. If you don't have that, then all these are just trying to argue, trying to correct, semantics and all those things. Two different things. What you said is very true. You think you know, but you really don't know. The best is J. Krishnamurti. Do you know what he said? When people say, "I know," he said, that person is the most dangerous person in the world. Because he said, what is there to know? All of your knowing is knowledge. Brain, memory. Memory is the past. As dead as the dead leaves. Awesome. So these are all knowledge. What you accumulate is of the past. Memory. That's why the cause of suffering under Mahayana is accumulation. When you accumulate a lot of rubbish, you have suffering. You must accumulate understanding, wisdom. And then it is not knowledge. It is an understanding. Understanding is not rigid. Understanding applied to the universal law is applicable to life. It's not rigid. Okay? So thank you for your good question. I think we better end here. We need to check into the hotel also. So thank you so much for the session. Then you tell Dr. J. Sadhu to him for arranging this. And thank you for Danny and the rest of you for participating and coming to this sharing. The books, remember to collect them. If you want more, let me know. Dr. J used to come to BJ. He can bring it back for you. Okay? Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks again to Virtue. Let's give a big sadhu to Virtue for his insightful talk. Sadhu. So it's always, at least, yes, always been a tradition for Aloka. We won't let you live with empty stomach. We must feed you. So please, adjourn to the kitchen. We have very delicacies for you to enjoy. So that's also a way we show our gratitude for you. Auntie Song to present food basket to Bratio for the small token to you.
Thank you so much. Never mind, it's okay. Thank you so much for the fruit basket and all the good offering. Anyway, my nature rejoices. And now I would like to offer back to Aloka. We can't consume it. Tonight we have a good sumptuous dinner. And I think we offer to the center. No, never mind. Offer to the center. Share. Yeah, you can. Sorry. And have Saturday.
Brother, the small token from us to Aloka.
I think it's good for us to conclude with sharing merits. We share merits.
Share merits.
Read the short version. I think you all also should have in your chanting book. Let us rejoice with the good wholesomeness and sharing that we had over the last 2 hours or so. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us now dedicate this wholesomeness to all the devas and all the other beings that have the condition to receive that. Akasata Chirpumata Devanaga Mahindika Unyantam Anmoditva Chiram Rakantu Loka Sasana Ripavata Jamehi Sampadan Unya Sampadan Sabe Deva Anmodantu Sabasampati Sriya Idam Nyatinam Hotu Sukhitam Hontu Nyatayo Idam Nyatinam Hotu Sukhitam Hontu Nyatayo Idam Nyatinam Hotu Sukhitam Hontu Nyatayo Devo Asatukarena Sasa sampati heto cha Kito bhavatu loko cha Raja bhavatu dhammiko Ipina punya kamena Mahane bhala samagamo Satam samagamo hotu Yava nivana bhaktiya to all the great beings, especially Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.